Okay, false choices about reading lists. Thank you for including me in the conversations with young mothers. I know what your questions are, and I've got some answers. Hope you didn't miss last week's. We talked about the false choices put forth in the conversation around preschool education. Oh, they should play. Oh, no, they need to learn their letters, blah, blah, blah. Everybody's all worried. That's because they want to make you worried. And it's the same thing if you're a preschool educator. They get you all into these arguments. Oh, not unlike the arguments that we get in politically. Next time I'll talk about that. But for today, reading lists. And here's another false dichotomy. In my neck of the woods, so to speak, there is some controversy about the book reading list that the government schools are giving to the children. Oh, yes, you may choose your book. Yes, but everything on the list is garbage. Literally, they're all garbage. And most of them are highly sexualized. And so the parents are talking about this. And I put in the question, yes, but what's not on the list? You know, Shakespeare's not on the list. Dostoevsky is not on the list, et cetera, et cetera. And then they came back and said, but if you ask that, you know, taking me rather literally, if you ask that, they would say, oh, we don't have dead white men. Okay. Folks, this is not multiculturalism. This is not inclusion. Because what you would have if you had multiculturalism is you would have the classics plus. So you would have Shakespeare, etc., the usual canon of classic literature, you know, the Odyssey, the Iliad, etc. But then you would work to include some work by women. How about Jane Eyre? What about George Eliot? If you don't know, that was a pen name. And so, yes, include some women authors, yes. Then you could get some black authors, and then you could get some authors who are not Western. You know, the Japanese women, the wealthy women, had a whole genre of them, you know, to themselves in history. And it's important to teach world literature, of course. Incidentally, while this is not part of the genre of medieval affluent Japanese women, haiku is a poetry form, and that should definitely be taught in our, well, we call them English classes, but in our literature classes, right? So that when Professor Turley, law professor, says everything in this indictment, if everything in this indictment that had to do with the First Amendment, that's criminalizing the First Amendment, were taken out, all that would be left would be enough words for a haiku. Okay, if you don't know what a haiku is, you don't understand that, and therefore you're not educated. Anybody who came through even the poor public school system in my day would know what a haiku is. But if you are fed only this stream of poor writing that's sexualized and trashy and degrading and modern, you're not going to know what a haiku is because it's only one category. I'm not even going to call it genre, okay? So this is a false dichotomy. If you're faced with a list of very poor books and you're told we are not going to do dead white men, what they're saying is we are against inclusion, we are against multiculturalism. But why would somebody do that? Okay, why would somebody give you this false dichotomy? And there's a very clear answer. This is part of the process of cultural revolution. It's a Maoist in particular, to tear down all of a people's history so that then you can replace it with your own version of the world, your own worldview, in this case, Mao. But it, the whole idea of cultural Marxism and cultural revolution has been adopted, although it was started by Mao, by all of the communists. So they have learned, if they didn't know in 1912, that violent revolution has some counterproductivity in it. But if you can have a long march through the institutions, take over education, first start with the schools of education like Columbia, and then the teachers' union, NEA was, I've just discovered, was founded by Marxists, and keep on teaching. If you take a long view of it, you're going to have a nonviolent revolution. And over 100 years, then the younger people are going to be not aware of what the founders thought in terms of self-reliance, so that they're not oppressed. And they're going to be seeing only the purported morality of collectivism. And so they're going to be ready to live in a socialist state, not knowing the downsides. So how many American students, even college students, know how many millions were killed in the last century with Marxists, by Marxists? So you may not know that the Bolshevik Revolution was relatively bloodless, but the purging of the Marxists thereafter was a bloodbath. And the same thing in China. Millions and millions died. And everywhere this has been tried, it has failed economically. And so I've sat around the table with, you know, say a Republican table at the Republican office, and in comes somebody from Colombia who talks about how terrible the socialists were and how they took away, etc. And or you get a young man from Venezuela who has escaped, and because he's young and he's bright and he's educated, he's willing to start again somewhere else. In fact, you see people who have escaped and who have college educations but are selling knickknacks on the streets in third world countries, right? So I've seen an Argentinian on the street of Honduras selling, you know, bracelets they made, and you start talking to them and you realize this guy doesn't belong in Honduras. This guy came from a much more affluent background than even the best in this city, but he's escaping because his country is in the throes of economic downturn because of bad economic policies. Okay, so what I'm trying to talk about is false dichotomies. And if you're given a choice of only A or B, then and C and D and E and F are hidden from you, you're being manipulated. I just read a book written for educators, written for Christian school educators, called Mind Shift. And if you don't go along with their program of change, and of course they don't tell you change to what, they don't say that ever, ever, but change. And if you are against their change, then you are for the old-fashioned mechanistic rote learning. You are for the age-graded schools that basically came out of the same country that these people came out of anyway, and you need to retire. I mean, it's really pernicious because it sounds great. You know, and I'm all for change. If it's positive change, but if you're not going to define it, if you're going to hide all of the options, if you're going to deceptively tell me that it's crowdsourced, but it's clear that you have facilitated it into a direction, No, you're liars and deceivers. And we know who is the father of lying and deceiving. So, false dichotomies is a way to make it appear that you have a choice, but the choices have been predetermined. Look for false dichotomies. You don't have to have either old dead white guys or a bunch of trash. You can have old white guys plus old white gals plus people of color plus people of other nations in your literature class. But if you don't have the classics, you don't have an education. Similarly, you don't have to have play or worksheets. No. You can have academics. That's very playful. Okay? No more false dichotomies. Don't fall for it. Okay, gosh, I'm sorry, guys, that I'm clipping. I don't know what's up. I've been clipping lately. That means the sound is distorting. I'm using the same mic, the same computer, and I'm using Audacity. It's been updated. I just don't know what's going on. Sorry about that, folks. Okay, doing my best. If anybody wants to help me do audio editing, I've got an internship. Maybe some high schooler would like to do that. You could learn something about audio editing and video editing, for that matter. Not that I'm an expert, but between me, you, and the tutorials from the company and from other companies online, we could get it figured out. Okay, great project for homeschoolers. And since I've launched into conversation now about the practical, next time I'm going to talk about false dichotomy in terms of sociology and history and politics, which if you've got high schoolers or even college age or just yourself as an adult, you want to listen to. But let me tell you, you need to share this. I get on, well, various conversations online or in person, and I hear the most distraught questions. Distraught. And I do have sympathy for that. I understand. If this isn't your bailiwick, you've never done this before, well, that's what God set up, is that older women should teach the younger women. And I'm here, and I just want to do it. And I'm putting this out for free. Yes, there are some materials that I make, you know. I would like to support this, and I'm beginning to wonder if it's good stewardship. I've been doing this for, what, 15 years, more than that, for free. I need some partnership, and I'm certainly getting some pushback from the negative forces, right? So I'm pretty sure I've been shadow banned, but and I certainly have been whacked on social media for curating. On my website, I have curated some things that I haven't talked about on the podcast. And, you know, I asked a question on LinkedIn. I asked a question. And we all know that the person to whom I was asking, the corporation to whom I was asking, was lying. But I got whacked. And last night I put together a very even-handed, and then I just deleted. I said, it's not absolutely my first priority. I need to help children. I need to help educators. I need to help mothers who are educating their children. So even though this is sacrificing what's true and sacrificing my free speech, I had to do it. I hated to do it. I have not faced it. Ethical dilemma that hard in a long time. Maybe ever, because I face the dilemmas, I know what to do, and I take my lumps. But this was deciding between two goods. So I need you to share. I need you to partner with me. And the first thing I'm asking you to do is listen consistently and apply this in your own life. And the second thing is share this with other moms or educators like you who would be interested. Would you do that? Because it really helps for them to know where I am. By the way, I also see that I have a whole lot more listeners coming to the website than I do subscribing to podcasts at this time. I don't fully understand that, except there's been so many more new broadcasters. But back in 08, 09, 2010, 2011, 2012, my gosh. And I was on a free podcasting platform. I was competing with Joyce Myers at that time, getting so many hits. What? I know. It's just ridiculous. And now, you know, it's pitiful. And I'm on every podcast platform I know about. I pay for a podcast host, but it goes out. So you can find me wherever podcasts are provided for. But I was originally on the radio, the Teaching and Talk channel in my metro area. And then I went on satellite around North America. But terrestrial radio is expensive. And it's mostly people who are older, you know, older than 60, who are listening to the radio religiously. And so when podcasting came around, not only was it less expensive, but I was aiming mostly for young mothers. And so I went on. I was an early adopter, and I think I had some advantage then. But, you know, you get what you pay for, and the host wasn't really very good. So I have switched to a more professional podcast host, but I have to pay for it, which I out of my own pocket. And I do a whole lot for the kingdom out of my own pocket. And, you know, oxes should be allowed to eat what they thresh. A minister is worthy of his hire, but I'm working for free. And this is not uncommon for women, and but it is uncommon for parachurch ministries. Okay, what I'm asking for you to do is share. And then look and see what you need in the store. Now, if you're really having financial trouble, you might be able to go back through the podcast archives and find most of those episodes, because most of them are a collection of episodes, but not all of them. And there's so many more things that I want to write. I need to, and to record. I'd like to do something about classical literature for younger people. Not classical in terms of Greek and Roman, but good literature that has stood the test of time for the primary ages, grammar school ages, and want to do something for better thinking skills for middle and junior, senior high schoolers, the logic and rhetoric ages. And there's just so much. But for right now, I'm writing for teachers, because we need to get the Bible back into Christian schools. People don't understand what has happened to the theory of pedagogy, the philosophy, and how it's been taken over. Okay, more about, well, I'm not speaking on that, but something about that next time. Okay, you'll want to get it. Okay, for now, go enjoy reading. Read with your kids. Yeah. And just read. Just be relaxed. Just because you have had difficulties in school, don't think it's because of you necessarily. Somebody didn't teach you well. If you didn't like school, that's because school was not up to what it was supposed to be. And if you didn't learn how to read well, it's because somebody didn't teach you well. Now, yes, I can hear it in my ears. I've heard, mostly male, but many of my college students who are older than average say, yes, you're talking about poor education, but, you know, we really weren't such great students. Okay, maybe not. But don't let any of that baggage follow you. When you're reading with your child, just have fun. Don't ask them to memorize the words. Just read to them, whatever age they are. And then, I've talked about taking them to the library. These days, you have to watch them like a hawk. Anyway, get good books for them. By the way, here's another tip for the library. Get Caldecott winners. So the Caldecott Award is for the best illustrations in a children's book, and they decide on one every year. Now, in recent years, you might not agree with their award, but you can get a list of all the Caldecott books, and often in the library they'll have a gold stamp on them, so you can go back and get the older ones. So whatever was judged by the, well, I guess it's the Library Association, I'm not quite sure right now, or the Caldecott Association, and find out the best illustrated children's books of the past. And that'll be good books. And then for the best children's writing, it's the Newbery Award. And I remember I figured this out when I was in elementary school. I read The Witch on Blackbird Pond, which was about, it was a historical novel about a Quaker woman, I guess she was maybe widowed, who lived outside of a Congregationalist town in Massachusetts, so they called her a witch, although she was not a witch. She was a Quaker. Anyway, it was a wonderful historical book. And then there was The Bronze Bow, which is Bronze Age. We're talking about the age of David, King David, in Israel. So those are great books there for grammar school age. So that's the Newbery Awards. And again, they'll have a gold seal on them. So that's a great set of books to read. Okay? And, well, you may not know what classic books are, but books that have stood the test of time. Like, you want to be sure and get the original Hans Christian Andersen, because people will put out a new book and they'll rewrite the story. But if you get the real story, it's a good conversation piece. Okay, so great literature, yes. And don't get involved in the false dichotomy. You know, it could be good on this criteria, but not so good on that. And so great thing to start talking to your children about when they're old enough, which is probably going to be like middle school. This is why they're called logic, or junior high. You know, my father, we would always have dinner together at the dinner table. And after dinner, my mother would clear away the dishes. Well, I guess we did. Maybe my sister and I cleared away the dishes, and my mother prepared dessert. And for dessert and beyond, Dad would be pontificating. And oh, that really put my sister and I ahead in life. We had some idea what was going on in the world. We had some idea of history and what it meant beyond the very minimal that the school was teaching. We didn't have a terrible school, but just certainly not enough. And my father was a lawyer. He didn't directly attempt to teach us about his world, but because he was pontificating about his opinions, we learned some things, some valuable things that just wouldn't be in a curriculum. You know, school, particularly public school, was not intended to socialize children. Not to teach them everything they needed to do, know, to be a functional adult in society. That was left to the parents. And certainly it wasn't for socializing. No, public school was organized so to make workers out of immigrants. So come at the right time, be in your seat when the bell rings, sit in rows. This is exactly the factory logic that they were preparing those students for, to go to the factories. Start when the bell, you know, stand at the assembly line and have your break at the bell and leave at the bell. So you need to do more, and you can do so much more. You know, at the dinner table, when you're tucking them in at night, when you're walking in the park. This is what God had in mind. You know, Deuteronomy 6, teach your children when you're going and coming, sitting down and laying down, you know. Okay, I'll get the scripture. I'll read it for you. Exactly, I should have it memorized. Okay, it's Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy is sort of a recapitulation or a summary of all the Mosaic law. And Deuteronomy 6 has the hero Israel, the Lord our God is one, which is the Shema, which all the Jews put on their doorposts. And so what I'm saying is the context here. So this is an important portion of scripture in Deuteronomy 6 and verse 7. Read in the King James Authorized Version, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. Well, let's go back to verse 6 to know what them is. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thy house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon the hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thy eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the posts of your house and on thy gates. Okay, so that explains the mezuzah on the doorpost. The Jews are doing this literally, and the Christians are taking it spiritually. This should be what you're looking at. And the Mosaic law did make not just moral laws, but a whole culture. I mean, everything from washing your hands and not bringing the germs of a dead body back to your family, but, you know, not murdering and not lying and having good witnesses in court. And so it was a whole culture, not moving the boundaries of the boundary stones between your land and your neighbor's land, and how to treat foreigners properly. So it was a culture. And the point here is teach your children and teach them, talk to them all the time while you're living, rather than throw them out and let them fend for themselves, rather than make them your slaves or whatever, or be slaves to them and pamper them. So, alternatives. So, why is this important? So, it's important because this is the culture that the Judeo-Christian has set up. This is the kind of education that God had in mind. That's where I was coming, and now the culture. And by the way, I just saw on social media somebody say, why are you all homeschooling? So this is the fundamental reason why Jews and Christians would homeschool. I guess Jews often have their own schools. Christians do too. And the Christians I know think that's an extension of the family teaching. But the homeschoolers would point to this verse, that God mandated it. But even if you are sending your child away or hiring someone to teach your child, school was never intended to socialize, meaning to teach them everything they need to be a functional adult in society. It wasn't. They don't teach how to manage a checkbook or a credit card, or they don't teach social skills. No, in fact, they prevent socializing. And so there can't be any good socialization because they narrow age grades. So the 7-year-olds are all together with 7-year-olds. So a 7-year-old can't learn from an 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, or other good adults. They have to sit in a row and be quiet. So it's not socialization and it's not socializing. Okay, enough of that. No more false dichotomies. Go and read to your kids and have fun.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom broadcast with your host, Sharon Sarles. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come.